Hello there and welcome to episode 10 of Launch and Learn. In this podcast, we talk to entrepreneurs about their experiences in starting and launching startups. This podcast is hosted by Matthias Dickerhoff and Alexander Thompson. Today, we have Julia Kupke on as a guest, who is the Chief Marketing Officer at Striper. Striper is a leading venture builder in Germany. Julia shares her journey having worked at multiple startups and as well as sharing her growth hacks that she has learned over the years and what she thinks is important to learn as a junior marketing manager.
Okay. Thanks, Julia, for coming on the podcast.
Happy to be here.
So it would be good for us just to start with a bit of your early backgrounds in entrepreneurship and startup experience. What was your first exposure to startups and how did you get interested in working with them?
I'm from an entrepreneurial family, I would say. So my brothers founded their own companies. My dad started several companies. So I had many touch points and I already had problems with strong hierarchies in school and within my first internship. So just doing what people say without personal interest or passion or the big picture in my head, that was the worst thing for me. So I was kind of useless for anybody. So I started working as a working student for a startup a couple of years ago, and I really enjoyed the freedom and the great impact I created as a young student already. And after that first positive experience regarding my work life, I started my very first full-time job at Venture Stars in Munich for their very young startup Miflora. And yeah, I would say this was my first step into the entrepreneur's life.
So did you have any, you said the Miflora already existed when you joined. What stage did you join and what was your role there when you started? And what is it, I guess?
Yeah, so Miflora is an e-commerce shop for flowers in Germany. And before I joined the company, I think they were around about 6 to 8 people. And together with me started 6 new people. So we were in the first growing phase. So they got the first investment round and tested the product before, and then they start to grow. And this was a great chance for me to be there from the beginning, to be one of the core members. And yeah, to be honest, in the beginning, there was no role for me. They got their first investment and they just hired people. They think they fit to the company and there will be enough tasks and there will be something for me as well. So the first day we were discussing what could be my role and I had no touch points with marketing or business at all before. So that was a great start and also a great chance to learn from others. And I started there as a normal marketing manager. And after getting more responsibility, I became the lead for performance marketing and analytics. And I was also the business connect to our wear management. And yeah, this was the growing phase, I would say. We started with our first performance campaigns. And in the end, we took over the whole B2B sector for flowers.
And going back one step, so you mentioned that you did not have any background in marketing and business. In that case, what did you study at university?
I was focused on media production and kind of website programming and film production, web design. So it was a kind of mixture of media technology. And I would say it was doing everything but knowing nothing. So you tried everything a little bit, but in the end, you were no expert in anything. But it was also great to see what's possible there. And in the end, you have to decide where to focus on. And I didn't find a place there for me. I tried it in television and production, but that was not my area. It was not business driven. It was more creative, but yeah, less in numbers and analytics. And that's why I decided to go for a startup scene. But I also used my knowledge there, kind of. So creating marketing materials, creating content, creative ideas, first websites, landing pages. Yeah, so it was helpful in the end.
Yeah, and tell us more about that as sales approach. I know in the floral industry, it's very, very seasonal, not only in production, but, you know, people tend to only buy at certain times of the year. How did you manage that with your
with your ad campaigns and your marketing?
Yeah, that's a crazy marketing experience I made here. You can say we made like 50% of the revenue on one day, and this was Mother's Day. And of course, you have a small team because the rest of the year you have 50 or 100 orders per day, or sometimes per week, because in the summer months nobody would like to order, and also a couple of weeks before Christmas nobody will order. This is very hard to explain, and also the prices are very different, so you cannot plan. You cannot plan the prices. It depends on the weather situation, depends on the market. And so a flower can be priced between 10 euro cents and 3 euros when you buy them. You know it like 2 days before you sell it. So sometimes we had to plan our campaigns on the same day when we sell them. So you shoot in the morning, or you get the prices in the morning, in the early morning, you shoot the flowers at 8 or 9 a.m. And then you bring it online at 11 or 12. And at 2 or 3 p.m., you talk to your marketing team, please run some ad campaigns. And in the same evening, they start to pack the flowers. So yeah, you cannot say it's planned at all, but it was fun.
Ah, very interesting. And actually going to your customer base, so was that purely B2C as well as B2B, or how did that sort of entail?
So when I started, it was B2C only, a typical e-commerce shop. But we recognize, and it's not that easy to scale this business regarding margin, because the prices are so different. So it's very hard to make really money with that business. So after I think 1 or 2 years when I was there, I started a test campaign for B2B. I just talked to some companies if they would be interested in sending out gifts to their end customers. For example, for cars, if somebody buys a car, the wife gets flowers, for example, when they get the car. Or also for CRM campaigns, if something got wrong, you get flowers. So all these kind of use cases we tested, and we found out this is very interesting for us and also for the B2B partners. And so we decided to go for the B2B approach only. It was very sales driven, and the whole logistic problem was not there anymore, because we were able to plan the sales packages.
Shortly after, I think that 2 years, you decided to move on. What? Why did you decide to make the decision to leave Miflora?
So one of the main reasons was the B2B approach. I mean, it was me who brought the topic in, and I was very proud that we got very interesting customers. So that was great for me, but in the end, this was very sales driven. My whole logistic and rare management was not that important anymore, and my learning curve became flat. So I decided to leave and start my very own startup.
Very cool. I guess it's a good time to talk about that startup. So I believe that you joined then Bonneval, or you started Bonneval shortly after. Could you tell us a bit more about, you know, what is this company and why this idea?
Sure. Bonneval is a platform for sellers of high-priced jewelries to jewelers or gold dealers. So we offered sellers a transparency on the whole jewelry market and first purchasing offers within minutes. And I personally believed in the idea because the market itself is very old school. They have great margins, but there is no transparency for the end customer. And I wanted to help end customers to get the feeling to get a good price for their jewelries and also have a better experience. I mean, we all know the feeling of these creepy gold shops close to the main station. Nobody wants to go in there. And in the end, you always feel ripped off. And the other way is to sell your products on eBay, but with a price of 5,000 euros and above, I don't believe you have a good feeling to sell it on eBay. So this is why I believe in this model.
And how did you kind of get your first customers for this? How do you kind of find those people who are looking to sell items?
I mean, the typical challenge of a marketplace, where to start, sellers or buyers. The B2B side was classic sales work. We had to do talk to the jewelers and the gold shops. It was not that difficult. Of course, they were not used to use any online services, but they had time and they were open for discussion and there were no competitors. So this was okay, just took time. But for the B2C part, so our sellers, we had to find a better way. Google was way too expensive. And so we found a really nice growth hack for us. We saw that many people insert their watches, rings, and other jewels on eBay, but without any success. We can see they entered their prices months ago and nothing happened. And so we just started to send them messages. Hey, are you interested in another platform? We can help you to find purchases for free, get a better price, and also easy shipping. So almost everybody said, yeah, why not? So we started to think about how can we automate this process, as we needed the time for B2B sales, for our product development and investors. And therefore, we started to build a bot who sent out the messages on eBay. It was funny, but also not that easy, as eBay learned a lot about us and they tried to stop us in any way. So, for example, we were not allowed to use the word Bonaval in messages anymore. I'm not sure if it's still like that. Perhaps I should test it on eBay. But you cannot send messages with Bonaval in it. And yeah, they always recognize when we send out more than 3 messages per minute and many things like that. So in the end, our bot had to be optimized. So we had, I think, 10 to 20 different accounts. We logged in, found the right seller, sent out 3 messages per minute, logged out, logged in a new account, sent other 3 messages, and so on, 24 hours, 7 days per week. Mm-hmm. And with this method, we paid less than 10 cents per item for our marketplace. So this was, the problem was solved for us, and we had no time to spend for anything about the B2C part here. That was for us the best idea so far.
Sounds like you found like good adoption rates on both sides. How did you guys deal with that growth? Like, did you guys have to scale pretty quickly?
The B2B part was not that big, so we didn't have to find too many purchases. It was okay to have, I think we had 70 to 80 different gold shops on the platform, because they were able to buy as many products as we needed. So if you have somebody who is expert in watches and the other one in rings and gold, then this is enough if they react fast enough. So this part we don't have to scale. But if you want to go in other markets, you have to start from the beginning, of course. You have to check if the eBay is there as well, or if you have to find other platforms, and you have to talk to new B2B partners as well. So it was not that easy to scale in the end. And for us, the critical thing was to get an expert in buying products. So we were only a platform, this point of view, and we had no experience with the jewelers. So I had no idea if it was a real watch or a fake watch, and this makes it really difficult.
And now going from Bonneval to sort of your next stage in your life, I believe you joined then Striper. Could you talk a little bit why you wanted to join Striper, as well as, you know, what are you doing there now?
Before I joined Striper, I was working for Accenture as a consultant. And there I learned what I didn't like about work experience. And for me, when I heard first time about Striper, I realized that this is the way how I want to work, and that they have the same mindset. And this is very important for the whole team spirit. I personally like to work every day with my colleagues, and that this is something that motivates me most. And I think this was the yeah, the most impressive thing for me, the people at Striber, but of course also the role as a CMO at Striber. It was a new challenge for me also to switch from an operational role to a manager here. Of course, I was manager at Accenture, project lead, etc. But this is not the same as you are responsible now for a team to improve their skills and their career. So for me, it's a different role with different tasks. I'm not longer the expert, but I kind of create experts and help them do the best job.
In I guess both of your startups, you were there like less than 2 years, and even with Striber now launching companies that are looking to get traction very early on. What are your strategies for getting that like early growth? Instead of like, you know, getting a slow burn and getting small customers over time.
To guarantee growth, we need to understand the market size and the channels, of course. So how can we reach our target group? This is basic homework for us. We always do. But besides that, for me, the retention rate is very important. So you can offer any product for free, give the greatest discount, or etc. You always get customers in the first place, but do the people come back? Do they love your product, or was it just a one-time test? That's very hard. So we do not focus only on classic marketing KPIs as conversion rate, click-through rate. Of course, we track them to see the potential, but in our early stages, we will never compete with other products who are in the market for years on Google. That's why we have to be very close with our first customers to understand if there is a need and if we solve a problem with our solution. And if yes, then we have to test if we can reach our target group somehow.
So like you said, you were doing operational work before and now you're more in a management role. What was the biggest adjustment for you, like a bigger learning point for you from stepping, you know, into more of a higher level overview?
I personally love to get shit done, and I think I still live this, but as a manager, you don't see it on a daily basis anymore. So it's a different role with different tasks. And also the point when you realize you're not the expert, you're not the smartest person in the room anymore. You're not the one who will be asked about a marketing topic, but you are the leader. So it's not that easy. My responsibility is to build a great team and to have a great team. I have to know how to motivate them, know their strengths and weaknesses, and to get the best out of them and not operate the business in their ventures. And this in the beginning is not that easy to realize, and also to still believe that it's important what you do. But in the end, of course, it is.
Do you sometimes miss the day-to-day work?
Sometimes, yes. I love to do something in Excel or build some analytics dashboards. I would love to do it, but I think there are people who can do it better than me. They're used to do it on a daily basis. I mean, even Google or Facebook changes their program from month to month, so I'm not the expert anymore who can create any ads.
So you've been a part of like the startup community for a long time, I guess, even in your family and different incubators, accelerator things. What are some common problems you see early founders face when they start to get growth early on? Are there some like common mentalities or mistakes people make?
Yeah, I think there are some mistakes you see more often. So for example, trying to do everything at the same time, try to avoid mistakes instead of just making mistakes. And one bigger thing I would say is that they don't ask the customer. I mean, it seems so easy and everybody says, just ask the customer and you understand it. But in the end, the founders are so passionate about their idea and they think they are the customer. So they don't have to ask anybody else. And I see many founders starting with showing their products, start with execution, building logos, language, brand language, websites, etc. And after that, they start talking to potential customers, launch campaigns, present the solution they think it would be the best. And then they realize the need is different, the USPs are not the best, the target group is different. So they start from the beginning and lost already a lot of time. So for me, it's not about having the best design or best product in the first place. It's more about the experience you get as a customer and also the solution I can expect. And therefore, I don't need a perfect process or the fanciest website or 100 features.
And what would be some key metrics that you would recommend people track when they're launching a digital product early on?
I will always go for the customer feedback. So what do they want? What do they answer? So how do they react? Do they come back? Or what do they want to hear or see or find? And it's not about asking them for a solution. It's just to test what are they interested in, to test in a real situation. I also would avoid to do surveys about everything. You cannot ask somebody, would you buy this product? If he's not in the supermarket, he cannot decide if he would buy it. You react differently when you're in a real situation. And some people think when they ask 10 friends, would you buy this product? And they say yes, then it's a good product. So keep in mind to have real situations.
I think that's really interesting, especially also as product people, because what you said really feels like what product people always say as well, which I really find interesting. And, you know, so myself, I'm a really big fan of frameworks that is related to products. So this could also be even a lean business canvas or UX canvas. Is there something similar in the growth space that you like to use?
I would say not about the process itself, but about the growth marketeer. So what we use, how we train ourselves and find our right people is T-shaped marketer profile. So this is the most important thing for us, to have the right skills. And with the T-shaped model, you define your skill set. So it's like the T, and you have so broad knowledge of different areas. You need kind of little product knowledge, you need a little bit of design knowledge, you need marketing knowledge, of course, content writing skills, sales skills. And this is something we always try to improve here, to have a broad knowledge to test all the different areas. Because when we start a venture, we never know what will be the right channel, what will be the right approach. Is it the growth hack we find, or do we have to call 100 people, or plan a Google Ads campaign, or write blog articles? So there is no framework about the process, but about the person, how they should be trained.
Yeah, and what kind of do you look for when people join your team and they apply, say, to be on the marketing team? What are the main skill sets or attributes you look for when you're hiring new people?
They shouldn't think in problems, because there are enough problems we have. They should think in solutions. So be very creative. And that's what I learned in my first years in startup life. You always have to find a solution. And it's not to say we have no tech resource, we have no designer available, I don't know how to build this. Yeah, then find another solution. So this very creative thinking, and on the other side, analytical skills. So everything we test is based on numbers. We don't start campaigns just to create awareness. We start campaigns to test something, and therefore we need good results or a good database to validate something.
I guess that's really like the word growth hacking, right? You try to hack together something lean and finding solutions as fast and cheap as possible, I guess. Sort of looking back over your career, what do you wish you had known when you first started out that you now know in terms of growth hacking?
Regarding growth hacking, I would say to learn more about the technical area. In the beginning, I was more convinced about the marketing part, so the typical marketing topics, you know, like creating some ads, nice content. This is not the most important thing anymore, I would say. Today, it's very technical. You want to track everything. You want to build different landing pages, individualized content pieces. You don't have enough time to do everything on your own, so you want to find nice hacks to optimize things. Therefore, you need technical knowledge. So the whole technical part is getting more important. For me, when I started as a junior marketing manager, it was not clear for me how important it is.
When you say technical, do you even mean like going to the extent of understanding a bit of front-end development, or just more on how to deal with the analytics and the quantitative side, or something like WordPress?
I would say both or all of them. So the analytics part, of course, is very important to set up all the tracking. Even if you have a product owner or tech support, they need to understand what you need and what is possible. So even if it's only briefing you give, you need to understand it 100%. And this is the basic. And besides that, WordPress, of course, helps if you just want to build a landing page or test another campaign. Therefore, it would be helpful to build it on your own, or even here, if you brief someone, what's possible to do to understand the other side, how long does it take to discuss or to go into discussion with tech people, how does it make sense to build it. It's also something, if you have the skill, this helps a lot in the team communication.
So like the first few months of a startup are always the most time intensive of, you know, working to get the first launches out and first customers and getting all that feedback. What was your motivation? Like, how did you keep yourself focused when you know, in your whole experience in starting companies, how do you keep that that mental edge, that focus when you're just like spending so much time on the one project?
First of all, the people. If I enjoy every day with my colleagues, then I'm in general motivated. So this is the one part. And of course, the other part is the purpose of the venture or the company itself, that for me, it makes sense to do what I do and that I have the big picture in mind. I don't work for execution only. I want to see the big thing behind and to see the passion within everybody. It's teamwork and also the vision.
And saying that, what are you most excited for now that you're working for Striber moving forward? What kind of drives you there?
I mean, of course, the team. I enjoy every day with the whole team, but also our client side. I think it's very unique, I guess. There's nothing to complain. And we work together as one big family. And everybody has the same vision to create great ventures. And it's not like the experience I had before at Accenture, where you work for your own career. It's just about your personal career. And you don't care about the purpose of the client or the your own company. It's just a part of your career. Not about the client or the end customer. You don't really care about that.
Cool. Okay, then. Yeah, thanks a lot. I guess we're coming sort of to the end of this. Did you bring a quote to share today?
We were talking about what was the way we worked at Bonaval. And when I think about that, I would say my quote is sell the problem you solve and not the product. Because that's what we did on eBay. And I think that's also what we do at Striber. How do we solve a problem? And we don't pitch our product. And yeah, that's how we test our growth hacks as well.
Very cool. Yeah, I very much agree with that as well. How can our listeners connect with you online?
I'm very active on LinkedIn. So yeah, just send me a message.
Easy.
It should be creative, of course. Otherwise, it should be kind of a growth hack.
Find a LinkedIn growth hack. Smart, yeah. Cool. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening today and for making it to the end of the episode. I hope you learned something.
Our theme song is The Vendetta by Stefan Kartenberg. If you want to connect with us or send in your guest recommendations, drop us a line at lunch.learn@gmail.com or connect with Alex or myself on LinkedIn. Otherwise, have a great week and we'll see you next time on Launch and Learn.